headlines, the Taliban say they've captured Afghanistan's biggest border crossing with Iran, as Russia says the militant group controls more than two-thirds of the Afghan-Tajik border. The UN Security Council backs African Union's mediation efforts over the Nile Dam dispute between Ethiopia, Egypt, and Sudan. And a Ukrainian soldier is killed and another wounded in fresh clashes with pro-Russia forces in the country's war-torn east. Hello and welcome, everybody. The Taliban militant group says it has captured Afghanistan's main conduit for trade with Iran. The Taliban said they will try to shortly put back in operation the Islam Qala border crossing in Herat province. An Afghan government official said efforts are underway to recapture it. Islam Qala is the second key border crossing the Taliban have captured since they launched a sweeping offensive in early May. The militant group says it's now in control of 85% of territory in Afghanistan. Meanwhile, Russia says the Taliban currently control more than two-thirds of the border between Afghanistan and Tajikistan. Moscow has urged all sides of the conflict to show restraint. Amin Alami in Kabul says the Taliban advances have led to tensions among Afghan politicians, as some are accused of working with the militants.
The Taliban militants say that they are trying to further expand their operations not only in border areas of western Afghanistan, but also across many other districts of this key province, I mean Herat, in western part of this country. On the other hand, the rise of Taliban attacks in northeastern Badakhshan province of Afghanistan has also created concerns and even tensions between Afghan politicians here, even in the Afghan capital, Kabul. Many have blamed some top political leaders and even military figures for being or behind secret deals with the Taliban militant group in order to retreat from key districts and areas in Afghanistan in order to help the militant group to expand their territory and control over the Afghan lands. In the meantime, Afghanistan's defense ministry also says that the counterattack operations are underway across Afghanistan against the militant groups, and that over 15 districts have been retaken by Afghan National Defense and Security Forces, known as NDSF.
Iran's ambassador to the United Nations says U.S. sanctions against Tehran are hampering efforts to import medical supplies and devices. Majid Takht-e Ravanchi described the U.S. measures as crimes against humanity and war crimes. The Iranian ambassador called for the removal of sanctions, adding that the harmful knock-on effects of U.S. measures affect all people, including women and children. Although the United States has exempted imports of humanitarian items from its sanctions regime, broad U.S. measures have constrained Iran's ability to finance such humanitarian imports. Tehran has time and again reiterated that U.S. pressures run counter to international rules. The horrific atrocities of a notorious anti-Iran terrorist group have come under the spotlight as it prepares to hold its annual summit. In the following report, we'll see how the West's stance on the group has revealed its double standards.
Iran has been a major victim of terrorism over the past decades, with over 17,000 Iranians losing their lives in terrorist attacks. Iran has long criticized Western states, especially the United States, for employing double standards in dealing with terrorism. The West's support for anti-Iran terrorist group Mujahideen-e-Khalq organization, also known as the MKO, is a case in point. The notorious Mujahideen-e-Khalq organization is responsible for the killing of about 12,000 Iranian people and officials since the Islamic Revolution of 1979. The group has carried out bombings and assassinations across Iran. The MKO is a well-known enemy of the Iranian nation with a horrific record that is known to all countries in the region and beyond. During the Iran-Iraq War in the 1980s, the MKO joined forces with former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein to carry out cross-border attacks. They also helped the former Iraqi dictator to crack down on dissent at home. After the war, MKO members spent many years in a camp in Iraq's Diyala province before being relocated to Albania in 2016. The cult-like group does not tolerate any form of dissent within the organization. Former MKO members who managed to leave the group have painted a grim picture of how the organization treats its members, especially those who intend to leave the MKO. They have reported abuses ranging from solitary confinements to severe beatings and torture.
Members and leaders of the MKO terrorist group are mostly based in Europe right now and enjoy freedom of activity there. They then hold meetings with top American and European officials. The notorious group has been allowed to hold another annual summit this week.
Over the past years, MKO summits have been attended by hawkish U.S. politicians, such as former U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton, former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani, and former Republican House Speaker Newt Gingrich. The U.S. politicians are said to have received hefty sums to attend MKO summits and back the group's calls for regime change in Iran. Observers believe the American and European stances regarding the MKO have exposed their double standards in dealing with terrorism.
When they say that they want to fight terrorist organizations, what they mean is they want to fight every sort of organization that is in any way an obstacle in the further benefit of Western hegemony. We have seen the term terrorism being used over and over and over again to assign any and every sort of organization, even the ones that are not even violent, any sort of organization that opposes imperialism.
The Mujahideen Khalq organization was on the U.S. list of terrorist groups for 15 years, but then removed in 2012 to pave the way for the MKO to receive funds more easily. Iran says lobbies in the United States were heavily bribed that year to facilitate the controversial removal. Major European countries, including France, also removed it from their blacklists. Top MKO members, including its public face, Maryam Rajavi, have been moving closer to hawkish U.S. politicians. The deepening ties between U.S. and European governments and Mujahideen Khalq terror group suggests that the West may be trying to use the MKO to pressure Iran.
It is not surprising, unfortunately, to see such a close collusion between the MKO and the United States of America. We have seen this happen for the past 30, 40 years. And this has become very clear a couple of years ago, of course, when they held a massive rally in which they invited people such as John Bolton and Rudy Giuliani, some of the most imperialist war hawks that the United States has ever known in the past, let's say, century. So when they attend meetings of the MKO and when they speak there of what they consider the need for, quote-unquote, spreading democracy to Iran, this is what they are trying to achieve, the resurgence of U.S. imperialist control.
How can Western states be supporting this notorious terrorist group and at the same time accuse other countries of backing terrorism?
The UN Security Council has backed African Union mediation efforts between Ethiopia, Egypt, and Sudan in a dispute over dam in Ethiopia. The Council urged the parties to resume talks. It said negotiations should be held under the leadership of the African Union and should recommence with urgency. That came after Egypt and Sudan called on the Security Council to help resolve the dispute. Earlier this week, Ethiopia began filling the reservoir behind its Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam for a second year. Ethiopia says the dam is crucial to its economic development and to provide power, but Egypt views it as a grave threat to its Nile water supplies. Sudan is also concerned about the dam's safety as well as its impact on the country's water stations. Ukraine says one of its soldiers has been killed and another wounded in clashes with pro-Russian forces in the country's war-torn east. In a statement, the Ukrainian army said pro-Russian fighters have launched 11 attacks on troops with mortars, grenade launchers, and heavy machine guns over the past 24 hours. The renewed clashes in eastern Ukraine have left the ceasefire brokered last year in tatters. Government forces have been battling with pro-Russian groups in eastern Donetsk and Lugansk regions since 2014 when they declared independence. According to the United Nations, the fighting has claimed more than 13,000 lives ever since. Well, new coronavirus cases are on the rise in Iran as the country is witnessing another wave of the pandemic, largely due to the more contagious Delta variant. According to the latest figures provided by the health ministry, more than 16,000 people were infected by the virus in the past 24 hours. 146 people also lost their lives from the disease during the same period, pushing the overall death toll to more than 85,000. The ministry meanwhile said that over 6.6 million shots have so far been administered and it intends to accelerate the pace of vaccination in the coming days. The number of infections and deaths has been on the rise since the Delta variant emerged in some of the southern Iranian provinces 2 weeks ago. And a new poll shows Brazilian people's disapproval rating of the country's president has reached an all-time high, according to the latest XP survey. 52% of Brazilians rate the government's performance bad or terrible. That's up from 50% in June. It's also the highest since Bolsonaro took office in January 2019. Moreover, 50% of participants expect this trend to continue for the remainder of the president's term. Bolsonaro's administration has been under fire over its handling of the coronavirus pandemic, as well as corruption allegations involving the purchase of COVID-19 vaccines. On Saturday, Brazilians took to the streets demanding the impeachment of the president and more vaccines to fight the coronavirus pandemic. Brazil faces the world's second deadliest outbreak after the U.S. Haitian police say they've identified 28 people in connection with the assassination of President Jovenel Moïse. According to the police, 26 of the suspects are Colombian, two others are Haitian-American. 17 of the suspects have already been arrested. The rest, all Colombian, remain at large. The Colombian Defense Ministry says initial findings suggest that several of the attackers have been retired members of the Colombian military.
Following the assassination of the Haitian president, Jovenel Moïse, Interpol officially requested information from the Colombian government and from our national police regarding the alleged suspects for this act. Initial information suggests that they are Colombian citizens, retired members of the National Army. We, the national government, our police and army, have given instructions for the immediate collaboration in the development of the investigation into the clarification of this act.
Taiwan has also announced that 11 suspects in Moise's assassination were arrested in its embassy in the Haitian capital, Port-au-Prince. The diplomatic mission says the suspects broke into the building on Friday, prompting the security personnel there to notify the Haitian police. President Moise, 53 years old, was assassinated at his home on Wednesday. Lawmakers have called his killing a hideous crime and a tremendous coup on democracy.
Haiti. The poorest country in the Western Hemisphere has again grabbed headlines worldwide. The country, known for its recurrent natural disasters, this time shocked the world with the assassination of President Jovenel Moïse. Moïse, 53, was shot dead early on Wednesday at his private home on the outskirts of the capital, Port-au-Prince, by a group of assailants. Haitian officials later said that the police and the army had managed to track down the suspects. Hours later, they announced the killing of four suspects and apprehending of two others, as well as freeing three police officers that the assailants had taken hostage. Still, the identity of those involved in Moise's assassination remained unknown. A journalist says a foreign country could be behind the plot to assassinate the Haitian head of state.
This looks like an operation which was funded either by a foreign government or by a very large mafia, whether that mafia was foreign or whether it was a combine of the U.S., of Haitian bourgeois families, many of whom were against Jovenel because he had taken back some of the perks they had in the past.
Moise's death has, however, caused confusion about who is the legitimate person to lead the country of 11 million people. The current state of affairs does not look good for a nation that has struggled to achieve stability after the fall of the Duvalier dynastic dictatorship in 1986 and witnessed a series of coups and foreign interventions in the recent past. Acting Prime Minister Claude Joseph was the first to denounce Moïse's killing as inhumane and barbaric. He later declared a state of siege and granted executives more powers to take the security situation under control. He also appealed to foreign governments for support, saying he doesn't want the nation to plunge into chaos. However, Moïse had just this week appointed a new prime minister, Ariel Henry, to take over for Joseph, although he had yet to be sworn in. Now, Henry says he doesn't consider Joseph the legitimate premier anymore. Rather, he should revert to the role of foreign minister. The Caribbean nation has witnessed a wave of politically linked violence in recent years. That's apart from natural disasters, including the 2010 devastating earthquake. The country is still struggling to recover. There are fears that the assassination of the head of state could push the country deeper into chaos amidst deep political divisions, hunger, and gang-related violence.
Emergency workers in Bangladesh have recovered 52 bodies from a burning food factory in the outskirts of the capital, Dhaka. Police say some 30 people were also injured after they jumped from upper floors as flames quickly engulfed the six-story building. Firefighters could rescue over two dozen people from the rooftop. Emergency services are still battling to put out the blaze on the fifth and sixth floors. The fry broke out on Thursday afternoon. Fire service officials say search and rescue operations will continue until the fire is brought under full control. A stockpile of highly inflammable chemicals is said to be the cause of the incident. This is the latest in a series of fires at industrial complexes and apartment buildings in Bangladesh. And that's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
the limelight.
With U.S. President Joe Biden still under fire for proposing a $753 billion national defense budget for the next fiscal year, the bulk of which would go to the Pentagon, a report published recently exposes the huge sums paid to the CEOs and other top executives of the nation's five largest weapons contractors in 2020. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Jessica Corbett, writer. This article is published under the heading Execs at Top Pentagon Contractors Raked in $276.5 million last year. Analysis finds. Stay tuned for more. With U.S. President Joe Biden still under fire for proposing a $753 billion national defense budget for the next fiscal year, the bulk of which would go to the Pentagon, a report published recently exposes the huge sums paid to the CEOs and other top executives of the nation's five largest weapons contractors in 2020. The new Center for International Policy CIP issue brief entitled Executive Excesses, CEO Compensation in the Arms Industry 2020. This was authored by William D. Hartung and Leila Riazi, who began by acknowledging the current president's recent proposal, which has been widely rejected by progressives. These enormous sums for the Pentagon are often justified as necessary to meet the needs of military personnel, Hartung and Riazi note, but in fact, roughly half of the Pentagon's budget is spent on corporations like Lockheed Martin, Boeing, General Dynamics, Raytheon Technologies, and Northrop Grumman, as well as the hundreds of thousands of private contractors employed by the department. The brief points out that those top five weapons firms received over $150 billion in Pentagon contracts during fiscal year 2020, and not all of these funds are well spent. Cost overruns and performance problems, expenditures on weapon systems that are not relevant to current security challenges, and investments in weapons that actually make the world a more dangerous place all detract from, rather than enhance, America's security, the report says. There is also widespread waste and excess overhead within the Pentagon, which is the only major federal agency that has never successfully passed an audit. Hartung and Riazi highlight executive compensation as one indicator of Pentagon waste, noting that in 2020 alone, the CEOs of those top five contractors collectively raked in $105.4 million. When other major executives at these firms are taken into account, those holding the top positions at each firm whose salaries are required to be publicly disclosed, total executive compensation at the major contractors comes out to $276.5 million for 2020, the report says. Total compensation for major executives of top five contractors exceeded $1 billion in total for the 4 years from 2017 to 2020. The brief contrasts the wealth of weapons contractor executives with the pay of U.S. service members, noting that average annual CEO compensation for the top five contractors is over $21 million per year, compared to roughly $39,000 in pay and basic benefits for a first-year military enlistee, a ratio of over 500 to 1. A general of the highest rank earns well over $200,000 per year, the report adds. Still only about 1/100th of average CEO pay at the top five contractors. The report also highlights the substantial share of each company's revenue that comes from Pentagon contracts, emphasizing that it means portions of the salaries they pay their executives are subsidized by taxpayers. According to the brief, for four of the top five contractors, defense revenues accounted for three-quarters or more of their business in 2019, the last year for which full figures are available for this measure, which includes sales to both the U.S. government and foreign government. When just sales to the U.S. government are taken into account, the figures range from roughly 37.5% for Boeing, which makes commercial aircraft, to 84% for Northrop Grumman, which figures available as of 2020. Hartung and Riozzi also detail how many jobs could be created if the $276.5 million in compensation for executives at those five contractors was indeed instead invested in education, green energy, healthcare, or infrastructure. Though it represents a small portion of overall U.S. military spending, such an investment could create 2,710 new jobs in infrastructure or green energy, 3,954 in healthcare, or 4,203 in education, the brief says. Exorbitant compensation for executives of the top Pentagon contractors subsidized by the taxpayer is just one of the examples of excessive overhead at these firms, said Hartung, director of CIP's Arms and Security Project, in an emailed statement. Congress and the administration should take a closer look at these costs with an eye toward reducing them and freeing up funds for other needed purposes. As Common Dreams reported after Biden unveiled his spending proposal last month, a diverse coalition of progressive advocacy groups has made a similar demand. It is crystal clear that the status quo is failing to keep communities at home and abroad safe, the coalition said, adding that there are numerous proposals on how to rein in the gargantuan Pentagon budget while increasing national and global security. We are eager to work with Congress and the Biden administration to support these or other long overdue efforts to scale back Pentagon spending, the coalition said. It added, the American people know that producing more weapons, green-lighting corporate contracts, and propping up endless war slush funds will not make us safer.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked.
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example.
Self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by famous Iranian Shiite orator and lecturer Hujjatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned.
امام رضا علیه السلام فرمود اگر مردی به یکی از محرماش
امام رضا علیه السلام in a narration states if a man gives a gift to one of his mahram ladies like mother, sister, wife or daughter and make them happy, Allah himself guarantees to make such a man happy on the day of resurrection. Also in another narration Imam Ar-Ridha states, kiss your children inside the house out of passion and love very much, because for each kiss on your child's face, you will be given the reward of 500 years of worship of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
ممکنه بگید حاج آقا اینا درسته؟ این روایات از جهت سند یعنی مثلا با یه ذره.
Now you might ask, are these narrations true and authentic? Is it really possible for a wife to reach such high ranks only by giving a glass of water to her husband, or for a man to give service to his family only for an hour? The answer is yes. Maybe upon the first look, we doubt the authenticity of such narrations. But upon more research, we find many of such ahadith and narrations regarding the importance of family and respect and bond inside the family. For more information on this topic, I invite you to go and check authentic Shia books of ahadith like Wasail al-Shia and Mustadrak al-Wasail, and see the multiplicity of ahadith by our infallibles about the significance of family and family relations inside the house. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care. Fi amanallah.
This is IRIB English Radio. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
On June 10th, 2021, 2,400 liters of firefighting water containing PFAS were accidentally released from the U.S. Army Oil Storage Facility into Uruma City and other nearby locations, according to Ryukyu Shimpo and Okinawan News Agency. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Pat Elder, peace and environment activist. This article is published under the heading Deadly June 10th Spill of Toxins from U.S. Military Base in Okinawa Could Sicken and Kill Thousands. Stay tuned for more. On June 10, 2021, 2,400 liters of firefighting water containing PFAS were accidentally released from the U.S. Army Oil Storage Facility into Uruma City and other nearby locations, according to Ryukyu Shimpo, an Okinawan news agency. The Okinawa Defense Bureau said the toxic materials flowed out of the base due to heavy rain. The concentration of PFAS in the release is unknown and the Army is not forthcoming. The spill is believed to have emptied into the Tengan River and the sea. During past investigations conducted by the prefecture, the Tengan River has been found to have high concentrations of PFAS. Poisonous releases of toxic chemicals by the U.S. military are commonplace in Okinawa. Consider how the latest spill is treated in the Okinawan press. On the evening of June 11th, the Defense Bureau reported the incident to the prefectural government, Uruma City, Kanatake Town, and the fishermen's cooperatives concerned and asked the U.S. side to ensure safety management, prevent recurrence, and promptly report the incident. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs conveyed its regrets about the incident to the U.S. side on June 11th. The Defense Bureau, the city, the government, and the prefectural police confirmed the site. Ryukyu Shimpo has inquired about the details of the incident to the U.S. military, but as of 10 p.m. on June 11th, there has been no response. If the Army responds, we know what they're likely to say. They will say they're concerned about the health and safety of Okinawans and are committed to ensuring safety management and making sure there is no recurrence. That's the end of the story. Deal with it, Okinawa. Okinawans are considered second-class Japanese citizens. The Japanese government has repeatedly demonstrated it cares little about the health and safety of Okinawans in the face of repeated toxic releases from U.S. bases. Although the small island of Okinawa comprises just 0.6% of Japan's land mass, 70% of land in Japan that is exclusive to U.S. forces is located there. Okinawa is about one-third the size of Long Island, New York, and has 32 American military facilities. Okinawans eat a lot of fish that are contaminated by exorbitant levels of a particularly deadly variety of PFAS that flows into surface waters from the American bases. It is a crisis on the island due to the high concentration of American military installations. Eating seafood is the primary source of human ingestion of PFAS. On April 17, 2020, a fire suppression system in an aircraft hangar at Marine Corps Air Station Futenma discharged a massive volume of toxic firefighting foam. Foamy soots poured into a local river, and cloud-like clumps of foam were seen floating more than 100 feet above the ground and settling in residential playgrounds and neighborhoods. The Marines were enjoying a barbecue in a massive hangar outfitted with an overhead foam suppression system that apparently discharged when the smoke and heat were detected. Okinawa Governor Denny Tamaki said, "I truly have no words," when he learned that a barbecue was the cause of the release. And what would be an appropriate response from the governor now? He could say, for example, the Americans are poisoning us while the Japanese government is willing to sacrifice Okinawan lives for the never-ending U.S. military presence. 1945 was a long time ago, and we have been victims since then. Clean up your mess. United States forces Japan and get out. When pressed to comment, David Steele, commander of Futenma Air Base, shared his words of wisdom with the Okinawan public. He informed them that if it rains, it will subdue. Apparently, he was referring to the bubbles, not the propensity of the foams to sicken people. A similar accident occurred at the same base in December 2019 when a fire suppression system mistakenly discharged the carcinogenic foam. Early 2021, the Okinawan government announced the groundwater in the area around the Marine Corps base contained a concentration of 2,000 ppt of PFAS. Some U.S. states have regulations in place that prohibit groundwater from containing more than 20 ppt of PFAS, but this is occupied Okinawa. A report by the Okinawa Defense Bureau said that the foam releases at Futenma had almost no effect on humans. Meanwhile, Ryukyu Shimpo newspaper sampled river water near the Futenma base and found 247.2 ppt of PFOS and PFOA in the river. Seawater from Makimanto fishing port contained 41 ng pair 1 of the toxins. The river had 13 variables of PFAS that are contained in the military's aqueous film-forming foam. So what does it mean that the water has 247.2 parts per trillion of PFAS? It means people are getting sick. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources says surface water levels that exceed 2 ppt pose a threat to human health. The PFOS in the foams widely bioaccumulate in aquatic life. The primary way people consume these chemicals is by eating fish. Wisconsin recently published fish data near Turks Air Force Base that shows PFAS levels remarkably close to the concentrations reported in Okinawa. This is about human health and the extent to which people are being poisoned through the fish they eat. In 2013, another accident at Kadena Air Base spread 2,270 liters of fire extinguishing agents out of an upper hangar and into the storm drains. A drunk Marine activated the overhead suppression system. The recent army accident released 2,400 liters of the poisonous foam. In early 2021, the Okinawan government reported that the groundwater outside the base contained 3,000 ppt of PFAS, groundwater drains into surface air, which then flows to the sea. The stuff doesn't just disappear, it continues to run out of the base, and the fish are poisoned. The Army's Kin 1 petroleum oil, the lubricant storage facility in Uruma City, is immediately adjacent to the pier, which is used to receive different types of weapons and ammunition. According to the commander of Fleet Operations Okinawa, Tengan Pier is a popular off-base spot for surfers and swimmers. Located in Tengan Bay on the Pacific Ocean side of Okinawa, this particular spot offers one of the highest concentrations of marine life found anywhere in this region. That's just swell, except for one problem. U.S. military activity threatened the continued health of that very marine life and the marine life of the ocean. In fact, the new base construction in Hanoko threatens the ecosystem of coral reefs, the world's first extinct ecosystem. Nuclear weapons may once again be stored in Hanoko if the base is ever completed. Kin 1 receives, stores, and issues all aviation fuel, automotive gasoline, and diesel fuel used by the United States forces on Okinawa. It operates and maintains a 100-mile petroleum pipeline system that reaches from Futenma Marine Corps Air Station in the south of the island through Kadena Air Base to Kin 1. This is the aorta of the American military presence in Okinawa. Military fuel depots like this around the world are known to have used vast quantities of PFAS chemicals since the early 1970s. Commercial fuel depots have largely stopped using the deadly foams, switching to equally capable and environmentally friendly fluorine-free foams. Takahashi Toshio is an environmental activist who lives adjacent to the Futenma Marine Corps base. His experience in fighting to control noise levels from the base provides a valuable lesson in the necessity for resisting the Americans who are ruining his homeland. He serves as the secretary of the Futenma U.S. Air Base Bombing Lawsuit Group. Since 2002, he has helped to pursue a class action lawsuit to end the noise pollution caused by U.S. military aircraft. The court ruled in 2010 and again in 2020 that the noise caused by the operation of U.S. military aircraft is illegal and beyond what is considered legally tolerable, that the Japanese government is also responsible for the damage caused to the residents and must financially compensate the residents. Since the Japanese government does not have the authority to regulate the operation of U.S. military aircraft, Takahashi's appeal for a flight injunction was rejected, and the damage caused by the aircraft noise continues unabated. A third lawsuit is currently pending in Okinawa District Court. It is a large class action lawsuit with more than 5,000 plaintiffs claiming damage. In the recent army case in Uruma City, the government of Japan, that is the government of Okinawa, is also unable to investigate the cause of the contamination. Takahashi explained, it has been shown that PFAS contamination causes cancer and can affect fetal development and cause disease in small children. So investigating the cause and cleaning up the contamination is essential in order to protect the lives of residents and fulfill responsibility to future generations. Takahashi says he has heard that progress is being made in the U.S., where the military has investigated PFAS contamination and has assumed some degree of responsibility for the cleanup. This is not the case with U.S. troops stationed overseas, he argues. Such double standards are discriminatory and disrespectful to the host countries and to the regions where U.S. troops are stationed, and cannot be tolerated, he said. Just listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 41 meters, 7410 kilohertz for Indian subcontinent, and FM, 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah. Never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
IRIB English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitani rajim. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته dear listeners. Welcome to another episode of Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio. We have many traditions that talk about the pillars of Islam. For example, we believe that the pillars of Islam in terms of beliefs are Tawheed, that is the unity of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We believe in Nubuwah or the Prophethood and the last Prophet, that after him there will be no Prophet, Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Obviously we believe in the resurrection and the Ma'ad. But there are other traditions, for example, that talk about the foundations of Islam in terms of acts, in terms of, you know, as we call them, the furu'atin, the branches of religion. Those branches of religion is that which has to be established by means of the pillars. But these are also called pillars. And the hadith clearly says that the one that we will be narrating today from Imam Baqir alayhi salam, that bunyal Islam, that Islam has been built on these, that these are the foundations of Islam, the pillars of Islam. Imam Baqir alayhi salam in this tradition mentions five things. As the tradition says, bunyal Islam alal khams, that religion or Islam as religion has been founded upon five things. And the Imam continues and says that the first thing that religion is established on is a prayer. Why? Because this is a relationship between you and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The second thing the Imam says is the zakat. The third thing is the hajj. The fourth thing is the fasting. So these all are acts of worship. And some of them have a social aspect to it, such as the zakat and the hajj. Even the fasting is a social. All of them have a social aspect to it, if you honestly have to ponder upon it. That all of these have a aspect that is between the abd and the slave and his lord, and between the abd and other abds, that is the slave and other slaves, if you have to really ponder upon them. But it's the last one that is most important. And the Imam alayhi salam, that is Imam Baqir alayhi salam, says that bunyan Islam alal wilaya, guardianship or the authority of the a'imma alayhim as-salam. Obviously the first of them being the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. His wilayah then flows towards the imams alayhim as-salam. Therefore we understand that if any of these acts are performed without this true wilayah, they will not be of a pillar of Islam. Rather, Islam will be very shaky. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to enable us to truly understand the concept of wilaya, to implement it in our lives, and to be true followers of it, insha'Allah. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
That was the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure. Oh Lord, here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no
Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Moscow says the Jabhat al-Nusra terrorist group, along with members from other terrorist groups, are involved in this. Now, the chemicals, Moscow says, are being stockpiled in Idlib province in the northern de-escalation zone. The terrorists plan to use these chemicals against the people and then blow